Oh my god, Pirates on the Great Lakes!
There are so many little-known fairy tales, folklore stories, and chapters of history to explore in this world. So much of it is wackadoo! Unbelievable, disturbing, enthralling, mind-bending, and just plain weird. When I find these stories, they get stuck in my head, and I absolutely have to share them with someone. Usually I inflict these tales on my husband Dan, along with our chocolate lab Lily and cat Collins, but I thought, why not share these with you? I'm Gina Wagner. Welcome to Tale Wagging, a gleeful retelling of little-known fairy tales, folklore, history, and more. Hey Dan, are you ready for some Christmas history?
Yes, I'm ready for Christmas history.
All right, this story has everything. It has a shipwreck, ghosts, and Christmas.
Two of those three things don't sound like Christmas. The only one that sounds like Christmas is Christmas.
And this is semi-local to us.
Oh no!
Yeah, this takes place on the Great Lakes.
Okay.
So the Great Lakes have some of the most treacherous waters in the world because of storms. We see it all the time out our window. There have been many shipwrecks we learned about in school growing up, but have you ever heard of the Christmas tree ship?
What?
Yes.
No.
All right, so sailing on Lake Michigan reached its height in the 1870s when there were more than 1,800 sailing vessels on the lake. A lot busier than it is now. After that year, it really started to decline until they had disappeared almost completely by like the 1920s. And the dominant sail-powered vessel on Lake Michigan was the sturdy schooner. Am I saying?
Schooner?
How do you say the name?
Schooner.
Yeah. Schooner.
You're fine.
I don't know why I can't say his name.
I don't know why it's an Osh schooner.
I don't know why. I've been reading too
Sounds
much.
Sounds like a German schooner.
I've been doing a lot of German, Scandinavian, and Austrian research lately in Christmas, so I'm getting all these extra H's in my vocabulary. Anyway, the schooners were built to haul heavy loads out of and into shallow harbors, usually lumber. And that was really important because there was like a high demand in growing areas like Chicago and Milwaukee at that time. And in 1860, the 123-foot Rouse Simmons schooner launched from Milwaukee. And by the 1880s, the ship was making almost weekly runs of lumber from Grand Haven to Chicago. There's a captain in this story, Captain Herman E. Schumann. That's probably why I was getting confused, because his name is Schumann. Took an interest in the Rouse Simmons at the beginning of the 20th century. And he had a wife named Barbara, three daughters, Elsie, Hazel, and Pearl. In the late 19th and early 20th century...
Wait. Pearl was a princess, right?
No, this is, no, she's not a princess.
Okay, fine. Continue.
So, late 19th and early 20th century, the German tradition of decorating an evergreen tree in the home began to be more widely practiced. So the demand for trees was high. Gotta get those trees into those homes and make those big holiday bucks.
Wait. In layman's terms, during this time period, it became popular to have a Christmas tree?
Yeah.
In your house?
Yeah.
And decorate it?
Yeah.
You're telling me.
Uh-huh.
In the recorded years of human history, that this hasn't always happened?
No. And you know who made it really popular in America? Was Queen Victoria. Because she has a husband from another country, Prince Albert, and he has the history of trees from his country. Sent decorated trees to schools and army barracks around Windsor.
Why can't I thank Prince Albert?
Because she was the trendsetter and he was the arm candy. I mean, he had a lot of great ideas about policy in his time, too. But everyone had the big heart eyes for Queen Victoria because she's the queen and he's just the prince. He's the queen's consort. He never gets to be King Albert. Sounds like, he's Prince Albert.
It sounds like the exact opposite of every argument that behind each great man is a woman.
Yeah, so she's like, oh, trees are a thing. Sweet, let's have a tree. And so they published this engraving of the queen, the prince, and their children all decorating a tree together. This was a big deal, too, because they didn't have servants do it for them. They lit the candles themselves. They added gingerbread to the tree.
Wait, you're telling me there was a time when we decorated our own trees and didn't have our servants do it? I thought that's why we had servants. Oh my God!
That was a great family tradition to do it yourself.
Been doing it wrong. Unbelievable.
All right, so anything Queen Victoria touches becomes the really cool thing to do. She's the one who started the tradition of wearing a white gown on your wedding day as a bride. So we have her to thank for that too.
What if I don't want to thank her for these things?
Okay, you don't have to thank her.
There are at least two trees in my house right now.
And they are beautiful.
Yeah, so great.
Okay, so getting back to the trees. It was not uncommon for a handful of these schooners to make late season runs from northern Michigan and Wisconsin before the worst storms and ice made it too hazardous. People were kind of taking risks at this time because you got to make money somehow and you got to make it in the fourth quarter when the money gets made. And so these ships would be loaded with thousands of Christmas trees for the busy waterfront markets in Chicago. Yeah,
this sounds insanely like dramatic and tense, right? This would be a total reality show today because you have to get the trees to the right place when people want them, but the weather is getting worse every day.
Yeah.
Every day it is more dangerous to make this run, but every run has the potential to make more money than the last.
Yeah, so it's like ice road truckers, but of the that's time.
It's the ultimate clash of greed versus common sense and safety.
And now they would totally make a show about it and compete the boats against each other for a prize.
I think I know somebody who has a production company in Chicago. Let's pitch them this idea.
So there's like two dozen schooners doing this job every season out on the water, just back and forth hauling these trees.
Do you think they throw harpoons at each other?
I did not find any evidence of piracy or harpooning or anything like that.
Oh my God, piracy, stealing Christmas trees, stopping people from making Christmas tree runs. Oh my God, pirates on the Great Lakes, stealing Christmas trees. This story could be better.
You're making it better.
Okay, go on.
We're going to need these laughs, so keep them coming.
Okay.
What would happen is the ships would dock and they'd sail directly from the harbor to the public. This is actually like really cute and nostalgic and festive. Like this traveling forest would arrive at the dock and you'd go. They make it festive by stringing lights on the boat. Customers would come on board and pick out their favorite tree. And many of these boats, including Captain Schumann's boat, would also sell wreaths and garlands and other decorations.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah, and his wife and daughters helped make these. It was a family business. It was really sweet. He had a big sign, said, "The Christmas Tree Ship. My prices are the lowest. 50 cents or a dollar." And he was like a really, really nice guy. He was really into this tradition and the holiday, and he was given the nickname of Captain Santa. Everyone called him this. He was called it in the newspapers. And people who lived in Chicago knew you had to go to Captain Santa at the dock to get a great Christmas tree. And he never really got rich from this. He actually would make a lot of deals, and he often gave away trees to less fortunate people who just needed a break. He loved being called Captain Santa, and he actually kept all the newspaper clippings about him in his wallet, which was protected by oilskin so it wouldn't be damaged from water.
Details.
Foreshadowing. Okay. Mm. So he captained several schooners that carried Christmas trees, and like many merchant sailors, he just couldn't afford to buy one himself outright. So what usually happened is captains would get together and they'd buy shares in a vessel. Like for the Rouse Simmons, he owned 1/8 of the ship. And he was going through a rough time. He actually filed for bankruptcy a few years earlier. and he passed on the expense of re-caulking the Rouse Simmons that season. So something I learned while researching the story I didn't know before was there was a tragedy in Schumann's family in 1898 when his older brother, August, who was also a captain doing the same job, died while sailing a load
of... Boat brothers.
Yeah, boat brothers sailing a load of Christmas trees to Chicago aboard a schooner named S. Ty.
And he died?
Yeah, the boat broke up after it was caught in a storm near Glencoe, Illinois. No survivors. And this wasn't widely mentioned, which shocks me because it echoes what comes later. Like, this boat wasn't the Christmas tree ship. It's the Rouse Simmons who's the Christmas tree ship that everyone remembers. And Herman was supposed to be on that boat with his brother, but he stayed home that trip for the birth of his twin daughters. He's already cheated death once. Captain Santa, Herman Schumann, continues to make late season runs with the Christmas trees. It was more dangerous to do this, but the demand was high, so you'd get a bigger share of the market if you kept going late into the season. By 1912, incidentally, the same year the Titanic sank,
dun-dun-dun,
Schumann had been hauling trees to Chicago for almost 30 years. He was still in his prime as a captain, but the Rouse Simmons was not. It was 44 years old, and the heavy loads over the years had really taken their toll on its condition. I also learned, not surprisingly, sailors are superstitious. There's a lot of things that kind of went goofy. On Friday, November 22nd, 1912, apparently...
Black Friday.
No. I don't know. It could have been. I don't know when Thanksgiving was. So maybe it was Black Friday. But apparently it's bad luck to start a voyage on a Friday. So dun dun dun. The Rouse Simmons had about like 3,000 to 5,000 trees filling its cargo hold and covering the deck. It was piled 8 feet high. So it's going to be like really top heavy. And it's this floating forest. And it leaves Thompson and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And some eyewitnesses said that they saw rats abandoning the ship before leaving, which is a strange omen.
Mm-hmm.
It's another sign that the ship is going to be in danger. And it was said that 3 crew members who were afraid of the omens and the oncoming storm just left the ship, forfeited their pay. They're like, it's not worth it. I'm not going. So this left 13 crew members, an unlucky number. Yep. Ships at the time would nail a horseshoe to the side of their vessel for luck. And if it's hung upside down, bad luck.
And how do you hang it upside down, though?
As the ship set sail, the horseshoe apparently was loosened by the strong winds and hung upside down by a single nail.
So they got their fine, right? Troll story.
Okay, no one knows exactly what happened overnight and the next day. There's a lot of speculation here. The winter storm that came up was really extreme. Winds picked up to gale force levels. Some people say ice must have formed on the trees all over the deck, weighing down the overly heavy laden ship. And there's heavy snow. But some people say, well, it was like 40 degrees, so that doesn't seem right. Another theory is that the ship lost its wheel during the storm, and given its poor condition already, this was all just too much. A surfman in Wisconsin thought he saw a ship matching that description flying a flag at half mast to signal distress around...
Somebody was surfing?
I don't think he was surfing. It was called a surfman.
Okay, go on. half mast, dude. Whoa. I'm going back to California.
So the flag at half mast would signal distress, and he saw it around 3 p.m. on Saturday. But they weren't able to send out a tugboat to help because it was already out trying to assist another ship. So they call up the next one down the line. They sent distress messages, and the next station sent out a motorized boat. But by the time the rescuers got to the location the schooner was supposed to be in, it had disappeared. The lifeboat spent hours searching and could not find a trace of it. Newspapers reported that Captain Schumann, another captain, Charles Nelson, who was another part owner of the ship, the sailors, and also some lumberjacks who hitched a ride, there might have been like as many as 23 people on board that just vanished. Barbara, his wife, was very worried when the ship didn't arrive on time. It wasn't uncommon for ships in trouble to dock somewhere else and ride out the storm and show up a few days later, but no word ever arrived. Over the next weeks and months, just remnants of Christmas trees just washed up ashore all along Wisconsin's shoreline. And newspapers in Chicago called it the year without Christmas. The tremendous storm that came up also took down several other ships, including the South Shore, the Three Sisters, and the Two Brothers. So, the aftermath of the missing ship. 12 years later, his wallet that was wrapped in the waterproof oilskin was hauled up by some fishermen in their nets, and the contents were all still perfectly preserved. And so they got it to Barbara. And after her husband disappeared, Barbara and her daughters continued the family business. They kept using schooners to bring trees to Chicago for years. And then later they transitioned to using trains to bring them to the city. But then they would still sell the trees at the dock. They'd like get them from the train, put them at the dock, because it was just part of the experience and kind of the tradition at that point. And Barbara died in 1933, and her daughters kept selling trees from the family lot for a few years after that. And when the boat disappeared, the practice of bringing the trees via schooner really declined. It just wasn't as worth it anymore, stopped almost entirely by 1920. And people kept telling stories about Captain Santa and the Christmas tree ship, and the story grew in legend over time. In fact, there are some who say they've seen the Christmas tree ship floating out on Lake Michigan. A ghost ship, piled high with Christmas trees. Ooh! She's most often spotted on moonlit nights, her sails ripped to tatters and wildly flapping about as if blown by gale winds.
Haunting you with the Christmas spirit we are.
Yes, as she and her phantom crew continue in desperation to reach safety. When they try to get close, it vanishes into the mist. It's usually seen on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Many people near Wisconsin have reported hearing phantom bells and cries in the wind. And people who visit Barbara's grave claim it smells like evergreens. I don't know about that one. Maybe she's actually just near a forest.
Maybe people just leave pine tree branches instead of flowers.
Yeah. The shipwreck was found 60 years later. And from the condition it was in, the maritime archaeologists, which sounds like a really sweet job, they theorized that the crew of the schooner tried to set the anchor out to stabilize the vessel. They pulled it out, heaved it onto the deck, and that made the ship top heavy at like the worst time. Any decent sized wave could have taken them down. And so they think the anchor just went airborne and snagged the bowsprit, tearing it off. And then the ship just like made a nosedive into Lake Michigan. And divers that have gone down to the wreck have found that some of the trees are still down there. The ones that are wrapped are still even green and have their needles. I've actually got a really cool image of the shipwreck that I'm going to be sharing on Facebook and Twitter when this episode comes out. And that's not completely the end of the story. In 1999, the U.S. Coast Guard and Chicago Maritime Community revived the holiday tradition of bringing in trees from northern Michigan. They make sure the trees get to inner city children and their families. For the past 20 years, more than 2,500 Christmas trees have been delivered. Commander John M. Stone said, "The Christmas tree is an enduring symbol of hope, love, and goodwill that brings people together. It is truly our honor and privilege to continue Captain Schumann's family legacy of faith, hope, and goodwill to all." And that's the story of the Christmas tree ship.
Wow.
What do you think of that story?
It's sad.
It is sad.
But it's Christmas.
It is Christmas. Would you like to hear something amusing to get us on our way?
Okay.
Would you like to hear the story of the Caganer and Cagatillo?
Bonus story?
Bonus story!
Oh, God.
All right, we're going to bring it up. This is actually some stuff you have some familiarity with because we went to Spain a couple years ago. And there's something very important to the Catalan culture depicted in nativity scenes. No nativity scene is complete without a figure in the background depicted in the act of defecation. They're taking a dump.
A poop?
They're taking a poop. A very small, swirly poop that looks like it came out of a Froyo machine.
Of a nativity?
Yep.
In Spain?
Yep. It's called the Caganier. The traditional version of the Caganier is this nice little humble man wearing this cute little red Catalan cap. And it's like a Where's Waldo. Like, they're not the centerpiece of the nativity. They're in the background, away from the manger. But you kind of gotta have one. The origins of the tradition are kind of unknown, but it's at least 200 years old. And the Caganier symbolizes luck, harvest,
poop,
fertilization,
and humor, maybe? This sounds like more of a Loki move than anything else.
Well, if you leave him out of the scene, your harvest won't be great.
Oh, of course.
So what I could find mostly the meaning behind it is like, hey, God, fate, whatever, the universe has plans, and something significant can happen whether you're prepared for it or not. Maybe baby Jesus is getting born and you're taking a poop. It's not really meant to be disrespectful to baby Jesus or to religion or anything like that. It's not making fun of Christianity. It's just a thing to be like, hey, don't forget, stuff might be going on, I guess. And if you have one of these figures, you can move it every night like an elf on the shelf. And these figures are collectibles. There's all sorts of, like, we saw tons at the Christmas market. You could have U.S. presidents. There was plenty of Trump. There's the Pope, which is weird. Some of them I saw today while looking up some stuff was Shakira, Luigi.
Shakira.
And the weirdest one I saw today was the Little Mermaid. Because it's pretty weird to see her naked butt taking a dump. It's not like she can pull down her scales. It just, I don't know, it looked like as if you had those like pajamas with the buttons where you just take the butt out, but there was nothing hanging down. It was very, very strange. You Google if you care.
No.
I would prefer not to.
No.
But moving on to my favorite. Oh. We'll get away from the Caganier. I want to tell you about Tio de Natal or Cacatillo, which is also pronounced Cacatillo because also poop. This is the Christmas log or poop log. Spain's really into this. This also kind of translates into Christmas uncle or pooping uncle, which is something new I learned today. It has nothing to do with the log. But Cacatillo is a log. He's got a cheerful painted face and he wears a little red cap. And you can find him all over Christmas markets in all different sizes. He shows up on December 8th, which is the night of the Feast of Immaculate Conception. The children in your household must look after him. You have to cover this log with a thick blanket so he's nice and warm, and you have to feed him. He likes almond candy, bits of orange peel, dried bread, dried beans, every night. And the purpose is to fatten him up. Sometimes he's bigger the next morning. You gotta feed your Christmas log. And then on Christmas Eve, you're making a face like you remember this story.
No, move right along. Okay. Keep it coming.
On Christmas Eve, the children go off to pray. And then they take a stick and they get it wet. And they come to the log, this wonderful log that they've been taking care of for weeks. And they sing a song while beating the log with a stick.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how it goes?
I'm going to try to sing it, but I'm probably going to loop in a different version instead. It goes, Cagatillo, tío de Natal, na cugus arrendades, que somos asalades, cagaterons, que somos bones, Cagatillo, cagatoro, avondanos y matos, sino que tos bip, etera, ancapad basta. Whoa, I really dropped the ball at the end. But what it translates to is, crap, Tio, Tio of Christmas, don't crap herrings, they're too salty. crap nougats. They are tastier. Crap, T.O., crap nougat, hazelnuts, and cheese. If you don't crap well, I'll hit you with a stick. Crap, T.O. So, after you have beaten this log into submission and sung to it, you reach under the blanket and you will find small gifts and treats because he has pooped them for you. That is why he is the poop log. And then sometimes he drops an onion or garlic cloves or peas water to let you know that it's done. Like, the presents are over. It's done now. I was wondering, like, why? Why did this ever start? And it looks like the history behind Kagetsu is he was originally just a big log cut by the adults and brought into the house before Christmas. And the log symbolized gifts of warmth and light that were given by the earth in the form of wood. And as the practice became more widespread, commercial versions of the log appeared with a painted face and a blanket. So, traditionally, Kagetsu is supposed to be giving out small gifts that you would share with your family, not big, expensive individual gifts. Most commonly, like the turon, which was in the song, which is a Catalan nougat. So, picture something that's like Three Musketeers bar without the chocolate, I guess. Small sweets and biscuits, dried fruit like candied orange peel or figs. And as he became more popular and more special to the cultural heritage of the area, gifts became a little more bling bling. I saw a video on YouTube today of a woman demonstrating how it works, singing to the log, beating it, pulling out brand new pairs of climbing shoes and a drone.
A drone. That's the best thing. That's the best thing in this whole story so far.
Yeah, that just about killed me. I'm like, what? How did he poop a drone?
Time to watch The Neighbors with my poop log drone.
I was so excited about hearing about the Caganeer and Kagetsu that I knew I had to find the big one. There was this really big Kagetsu outside this beautiful cathedral in Spain when we were visiting in Barcelona, and we went to the market there and it was amazing. There were so many Kagetsu everywhere of different sizes and faces, and I picked up one for myself, and then I went to the giant one. There was a large line of children, and I joined the line. I was the largest person there, but I really wanted to participate, and they lined us all up by the log and gave each of us a stick. And I did not know the words of the song at all at that time, but I joined in with the beatings and I got a lollipop for my troubles. And it was so fun and I loved it. And I'm actually gonna share a video of this on my Facebook page and Twitter if you wanna see it. So we started with a beautifully nostalgic story that ended in tragedy and ended with a lot of poop jokes and also nostalgia and tradition and singing. Dan, will you join me in the tradition of beating a log this year?
I'll beat something. Excuse me, I have to go poop some treats.
Oh, that is our story. Tune in next time for stories about Belschnickel and the niece or Tomta and the Julbach. I will tell you what all of that is next time. Kagetsu, kagatoro, te vayas do peño, non cagues arengades, que son más asalades. Kagatoro, que son mespons, kagatio, kagatoro, si no donare un cop tu besto. Thank you for listening to Tail Wagging, a gleeful retelling of little-known fairy tales, folklore, history, and more. If you'd like to get in touch or send us a story you'd like to hear on the podcast, you can find us on our Facebook page, Tail Wagging Podcast, or on Twitter, at Tail Wagging Pod. That's TaleWagginPod. We'd really love it if you could take a moment to please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast anywhere you can. It really helps us get found on this new adventure. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend, tweet about it on the interwebs, or send a raven. And if you are under an evil enchantment or have been turned into a creature of some kind, I can't promise listening to the next episode will transform you back, but it might. This is Tail Wagging. May all your dreams come true.